Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I've got Tony and Rick here as always. Gentlemen, we've got some good stuff to cover today. Let's hop in here. First and foremost, BlackRock is running its own node, and every night they pull the Bitcoin balances from their wallet addresses on Coinbase Prime, validating the Bitcoin held by IBIT. And at the end, he says, this is why them and other ETF issuers are trusted by America's advisors so much, they know their clients won't get SBF'd. Rick, why don't you give us your initial comments? What did you think when you learned that BlackRock is running its own node?
Yeah, it's quite funny, isn't it? Like, you know, people get quite excited about this news, like, oh, BlackRock's now running a node. I mean, my mate Steve, who lives in a small house, like a couple streets away, right? Like he's been running a node for about 8 years. So, you know, congrats, Steve. You figured it out way ahead of Larry Fink, right? So that's quite amusing. You know, isn't it quite amazing that, you know, now in 2024, the whole idea of you can be your own bank became true, right? You can run the same infrastructure in your house relatively cheaply, the same infrastructure that someone like BlackRock runs, right? And I mean, yeah, it just kind of proves that it was true. You can be your own bank. And yeah, maybe it questions just how important BlackRock is if someone can do it in their bedroom, the same sort of thing. The other interesting element I think about this tweet is that, well, there's a few things, right? Like, I think people could misinterpret this as like, oh, okay, right, I can absolutely trust BlackRock then to hold all my Bitcoin for me because they've got a node and they're validating things. Well, okay, they might be validating things for themselves, but how much of that information are they actually sharing with you? I think in that tweet it said they will show institutional investors, you know, all this verification of funds and whatever. Fine. But you know, what if you're just a guy who's trying to keep his pension safe or something, right? I don't know if on their little AI chatbot on their website or something, you can say, hey man, you know, just send me your public address. I just want to check the Bitcoins there. I don't think you're going to get a sensible response out of them. So, you know, you're back to a trusted model again. And the guy in the tweet said, oh, you know, and BlackRock's been around forever, so you know for sure that you won't get SBF. Well, nah, bollocks. You don't know that. You don't know that that's true, right? Because no one's proving anything to you. So to sum up, I think, yeah, you can have the same infrastructure as BlackRock and you can go and buy Bitcoin and look after it yourself and not have to trust BlackRock. And I don't know how trustworthy BlackRock is. I'll leave that to the audience to sort of, I'm sure they've already got their own opinions about that organization.
Yeah, Tony?
Yeah, of course, man. Everything you said, Rick, is spot on. I mean, the problem here is that you're required to trust with a trustless asset. You know, it's like there's a conflict here somewhere. BlackRock running its own node. Yeah, congratulations, BlackRock. You've done your homework. You know that this is, you know, a key piece of, you know, doing a proper custody of people's Bitcoin. But why are you limiting this to institutional investors? Why not everyone? I mean, Bitcoin's supposed to be transparent from, you know, from beginning to end. So if that's the case and you're using it and you're a reputable company, so why don't just be transparent about everything? You know, like why limit that information? You know, so I guess people are relying on their reputation that BlackRock has this pristine image that they have to uphold, and they wouldn't dare screw around with this, you know, risking to damage it all. But, you know, you can also argue that BlackRock is also known for, you know, very creative manipulation and all sorts of shenanigans on the market. So, you know, that's also a reputation that they have. So which one are you going to uphold more in a scenario like this, right? So as far as I'm concerned, you know, if they're fully transparent and they have nothing to hide, well, then, you know, all this information should be made publicly the way it's intended. Bitcoin, you know, is a public ledger. You know, why are you restricting and filtering, you know, the details that you're putting out on that matter? So I don't think it's a very honest take on their part. You know, some people want to trust BlackRock, but then again, you know, if those people are buying the ETFs, it's not like they understand Bitcoin to begin with, right? So they're trusting BlackRock anyhow to tell them that, yeah, this is a good place to put your money without really understanding what it is that they're buying, which is nothing. So how this all plays out, I don't know. But, you know, this wouldn't entice me to become a BlackRock customer. Just put it that way.
Right. No, I think what Nayib Bukele did in El Salvador, where he, you know, he provided like proof of reserves of the
absolutely
of the nation's Bitcoin, I think that's going to be like the game theory hasn't caught up to some of this stuff where everyone's going to have to be fully transparent. But eventually it's just going to be par for the course. Everyone's going to be expected to do that.
Hey there, just a really quick break from Bitcoin Banter and we'll be right back. Wanted to remind you that we, the Bitcoin Way, are the leaders in achieving self-sovereignty. Whether it's self-custodying your Bitcoin properly and securely, protecting your online life and keeping it private, or even coming up with a plan B option in the event you would need to move yourself or your family elsewhere. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a few minutes to learn more from a member of our team. We hope to see you soon.
Okay, on to... we talked about Pavel Durov. Messaging app Telegram will provide more data to governments, including users' IPs and phone numbers, in response to, quote, valid legal requests. I can't wait to see who gets to decide what a valid legal request is. Any comments from you, Tony, on this? We talked about Pavel and his arrest in France a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's utterly disgusting and disappointing to see this. But it's utterly disgusting and disappointing to see this. But you know, to be honest, not totally unexpected. All of these guys are cowards at the end of the day. You know, like you squeeze them a little bit and they all bend at the knee and they sell out their entire customer base because of this. Now, to begin with, you know, Telegram was not necessarily known for being that super duper encrypted app. It wasn't. Its encryption was off by default, you know, unknown to many, many users that thought it was encrypted. That's not true. Group chats are not encrypted. You know, you have to create a private messaging group, secret chat specifically for that. And the encryption is like a custom made one, you know, that's owned by Telegram. It's not based on open standards. There's also that tool, Element of Trust, that you have to rely on. All in all, I think a lot of people are going to abandon the platform, whether they truly understand its implications or not. It doesn't really matter. Just on a superficial level, the guy is selling us out, and he might lose like a whole bunch. But most normies, you know, are not even paying attention to the news, so they might even not realize that any of this has taken place, and you know, life goes on as if no big deal. But if you care about your privacy at all, and you know, you value that, you know, apps like Telegram should absolutely not be something that you use if it's for confidential data. If it's just for casual, you know, chatting, you know, keeping in touch, you know, with certain people on a superficial level, yeah, it's not a big deal. It's got nice features. But anything beyond that, that you consider sensitive, there are way better options that are fully verifiable, open source, you know, fully end-to-end encrypted that you can engage in.
Yeah. The takeaway for me is that there are very few Edward Snowden's and Julian Assange's out there who will put their entire life on the line for privacy, transparency, whatever the case may be. And on one hand, I sympathize with the guy. Who knows what the threat of jail time was, and I understand he feels like he has a life to lead, but it's unfortunate for the customers who have thought that they've been able to privately message, and then next thing you know, they realize, oh, any valid legal request in a place like the UK right now, where a lot of this stuff is going on, does that, you know, put those users at risk all of a sudden? And I think down the road, it certainly could, if it isn't already. Rick?
Yeah, I mean, it's not great news at all. It's especially not great news for someone like me who lives in the UK, right? I assume this will be the last time I join you on the podcast, gentlemen, right? I'm almost certainly going to be locked up by the end of the week, right? Now they can go through all our group chats. I'm in big trouble. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, isn't it, right? You know, freedom of speech is meant to be this important ideal that we all hold on to, but very easily we let these rights slip through our fingers. And you know, it's not like, you know, everybody in the UK at the moment is really upset about, you know, some rich people bought a suit for the prime minister and they're wondering whether that's like, you know, a big problem. And that's what everyone's focused on. And yet something as important as your right to free speech is slipping through your fingers, but people don't notice, they don't care. So it's, unfortunately, you know, it sort of shows that we're not headed towards the right direction here. So yeah, it's a bit of a shame. And, you know, from what I've read as well, I think you've got to assume that your messages are not private at all on Telegram any longer, right? You know, like there's things I read, something like, you know, if they see any of this kind of illegal content, then they'll make it harder to find or less searchable. They'll reveal IP addresses to the authorities. And the question is, right, it's They've said that they'll reveal IP addresses and potentially identities and stuff like that. But also, how do they know what that the content you're sharing is illegal in the first place, right? That leads me to believe that basically, if you're sharing it on Telegram, you've just got to assume that it can be seen. I wouldn't trust it for that. And again, it shows that, just like decentralizing the money, I think, messaging apps, social media apps like Nostr and Keet and all these kind of cool applications that are coming out now has got to be the only way for information to be properly free, just like Bitcoin made the money free. So, hopefully it's not great news, but hopefully it just drives that ecosystem on that bit more, right? So, yeah, fingers crossed, it's going to be a long battle, that one.
Yes. All righty. Interesting site I found this week. It's called surveillancewatch.io. And you can actually go in. One of the ones that I think a lot of people know is Palantir. So you can find these different companies that are spying or supporting spying on civilians. And if I click Palantir over here, you probably can't read it on the screen, but it says they operate one of the largest and most lucrative surveillance systems. They pull metadata to uncover connections between individuals, DMV records, license plate reader data, employment data, arrest records, and work in partnership with the NSA. It says the technology is used in these countries, and it's funded by BlackRock, speak of the devil. We got State Street, so all the big players that you'd probably expect, and then there are different affiliations that these companies have. So you can go check who are the targets, who are the funding organizations. A lot of interesting data. Tony, what does this say to you? What are like the takeaways in terms of practical? What should people be doing or thinking about?
The first time I saw this website, it blew my mind and just it reconfirms what I've been saying all along, that they are losing control of the narrative. Like, who would have thought 10 years ago a website like this would expose all the true criminals and all the illegal activities that are happening worldwide without anybody's knowledge? Like, if you go down this list, how many of these companies do you know? Probably none of, maybe one, maybe two. And look how many they are. Okay, look, it's not like it's a one or two. There's dozens of them all over the place. But if you go up the chain of command, who's funding most of them? Like they all seem to meet at the top, and there's a common name that's out there that everybody cheers, for a certain ETF. But at the same time, that same institution that you are so proud of, because now that somehow they're involved in Bitcoin, is also involved in these other interesting activities that are screwing you. In parallel. So it's important that this information is put out there, and I'm happy it is. Hopefully a lot more people will pay attention to it because it exposes what's going on. And as long as it goes unnoticed, nothing will stop it. But hopefully with enough pressure, enough eyes on it, something might change. I don't know. I choose to remain hopeful, but it's very obvious to me that most people just don't care. Like their whole lives can go up in flames and they'll be like, oh well, how was that basketball game? Which is even more disturbing than the news itself. But you have to look out for yourself, and hopefully there's enough people, that do the same thing. And we don't need 100% to make a difference. You just need enough of a crowd to break that mold, and maybe that's it. Maybe that exposure like kicks it off.
You're right, and actually, to hit on something Rick talked about in the last bit, I was telling my wife this the other night that right now, I don't know if you guys are following this or if you've seen it. I'm not following it, but P. Diddy, Sean Combs has been arrested. You got all these distractions, and who are the affiliations and everything? I was like, we've got some unbelievable stuff happening in the world, and it's like they just had to pull out another distraction because the war in Israel is a lot less interesting than, these idiot celebrities to most people. And so now our minds are off of like everything, like the real stuff that's broken, arrests in the UK, the threat of world war, all this nonsense going on. And we've been consumed by stuff that doesn't really probably matter very much to the average person. Hopefully they find any affiliations in that sort of case and prosecute and people go to jail if they deserve it, but it's like who cares? Like things are falling apart in a very massive way. So Rick, comments on Surveillance Watch?
Yeah, crazy. Like that's wild, man, right? You go through that website and you're just like, well, you realize what you're up against, right? And it really highlights why, no one's going to give you your privacy. You have to go out and take it, right? If you're just going to use like out of the box software and you're going to use out of the box mobile phones and all this sort of stuff, then just accept that you are sort of in this surveillance farm, right? And multiple companies are watching you. I mean, just I think I read this week in Scotland, where I live at the moment, they've just done a deal. Now they're going to start introducing like AI style facial recognition cameras, right? So now we're getting into like we're heading straight into the Chinese model of like constant surveillance, gatekeeping your access to various things, and eventually they'll tie that to a CBDC. You cannot have freedom without privacy. That's what I think most people just don't seem to grasp that concept yet, right? They think, oh, well, if I've got enough Bitcoin or I have enough wealth, then that's enough. And it's only really like one side of the coin. If you have no privacy at all and everything you do is monitored, then it becomes very easy to control you. So that's kind of scary. And I enjoyed the fact that you pointed out P. Diddy, Michael, right? That's just some funny stuff, right? Like, okay, so the UK government, right? If I post like a meme that's a little bit too spicy, right? Like PC Plod is around chapping on my door, but P. Diddy can go on Amazon and order 5,000 bottles of lubricant and no one notices. And I'm like, hang on. If this guy really is involved in like sex trafficking and all these heinous crimes, right? What I tend to notice is that, who do they use the surveillance tools against? Well, they use it against just normal, ordinary citizens, right? Or people who question their narratives or, some of the actions that they take. But if you're in that big club, right? If you're in the inside group and, maybe you're acting as an agent to blackmail celebrities and politicians through your weird sex parties and stuff, then, oh, well, conveniently, none of this surveillance tech picked up any of that. I mean, can you imagine the state of P. Diddy's phone, right? Like you're telling me there was no incriminating information that these people could find. So again, there's a surveillance state that's growing at a rapid pace. And I think, we've got to get more sensible about protecting ourselves. We can't just ignore it anymore for the sake of convenience. We have to understand what's at stake.
Completely agree. All righty, last one for you. So MoneyGram, big remittance payment service, goes offline as it investigates a cybersecurity problem. So this article's from yesterday. They don't go into detail here on CBS as to what the security incident was, but it does say that it's widely used by immigrants across the US to send payments to their home country. And this got me thinking, wouldn't it be really cool if there was like a decentralized money with 100% uptime that had really low transaction fees? You could send value across the world without banks or intermediaries or clearing houses or anything. I feel like that would solve a lot of problems. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Tony?
No, you're absolutely right, man. I've been dreaming about something like this as well. Something that, nobody can manipulate, nobody can shut down, nobody can concoct, nobody can steal from. I wonder what that is. So this is why we have Bitcoin. All these centralized systems that are tied to broken money. Well, eventually this is what happens when the cracks start becoming larger. They claim it's a cybersecurity problem, but is it really? Who's verified this? Maybe this was intentional. Maybe this was like a practice run for something bigger. I mean, I've always said at some point, some sort of fabricated cyber attack will come about that'll lock people out of their bank accounts. And they will, and they will be blamed on some sort of foreign terrorist attack. You can do that when you control the money and you control all the moving parts that are attached to it. So decentralized models, we're starting to see their flaws a lot more, their dangers. Imagine all these people that are relying on these remittances. Now they're locked out for a few days. If you have sick family members, they can't pay for medicine. If they're relying. Families are being fed, with that money. Where are they gonna? How are they gonna eat? These are all real problems. It just brings back very dark memories from my early days during the collapse in Lebanon. This is exactly what happens. You have no money to do anything, and so the only thing that sets in is panic, and instinctive reactions. So yeah, very, very sad to read. Hopefully they get this stupid thing back up and running sooner rather than later. And hopefully all those that are affected by it don't just like sweep it under the rug and forget about it just because it's back online and actually start, looking at alternatives. I mean, Bitcoin was created specifically to put an end to this rubbish.
Definitely, Rick.
Yeah, this one, this was a kind of interesting one when I opened it, right? Because it sent me back like 10 years instantly. Because I remember, like, see, back in like 2015 and that sort of time, I remember like the big target or the thing that everybody was talking about on Bitcoin Twitter and stuff was going after Western Union, right? Like, all the memes were about like the cost of sending money via Western Union for remittances back home versus using Bitcoin, and that was the big thing. I mean, you know, there was still talk about, central banking and that sort of thing, but actually there was a huge focus on remittances and Bitcoin really demonstrating its use case against these companies. 'Cause, it's not just the fact that they've gone down. These companies, they make a hell of a lot of money sort of preying on some of the poorest, most vulnerable people in the world, right? These people that are sending money back home. In some cases, well, you look at the kind of fees that someone like MoneyGram charges. Like, first of all, they're not easy to find out if you go and search for them on their website, because they kind of vary depending on how much you're sending, where you're sending it to, the currency you're using. And then on top of that, they will charge you an uplift. So they'll give you an exchange rate, right, into the currency that you're changing into. But obviously, they're going to add a little extra on for themselves as well. So, in some cases, you might find yourself paying like 5% or more on the money you send home. Now, if you're trying to send $100 home to, someone in a poor country, taking 5, 10 bucks out of that remittance payment is pretty predatory in my mind, right? Like, if you understand, I mean, what's actually moving, right? We're just changing numbers in databases here. So the idea that you need to take 5 or 10% of that to update your centralized ledger to move that money to another person's ownership is crazy. And I think maybe more of the focus now has moved towards like targeting the Fed and central banks. But it's kind of funny to me that even 10 years later, and it's like, shit, right? Okay, these money remittance services still exist, like. Maybe it's disappointing in some ways, like Bitcoin hasn't completely made them defunct yet, and like Tony says, it should. It's a far better solution. So it maybe begs the question, well, why are more people not adopting it and using it to send money home? Maybe it's an education problem. Maybe it's still a trust problem, right? They still see Bitcoin as a bit scammy or something like that, and we all need to do better to educate people. But yeah, I mean, if you don't want your money to get locked up for 3 days and all this stuff, then don't use these services. And also, like Tony said, they said it's a cybersecurity breach of some description, right? We don't know what that is. But would you want to bet that MoneyGram has your name, your address, pictures of you, your passport number, your ID? Like, how do you know all of this stuff wasn't compromised, and now you're at risk from identity theft and all this other fraud and nonsense and carry on? And you could have just sent some Bitcoin back home, right? Like, hopefully, events like this are the kind of marketing we need, because maybe the people have to feel the pain to look at the alternatives. But yeah, another centralized failure. It's almost too easy to predict now.
I imagine that as Bitcoin's volatility decreases over time, as like that adoption curve, we talk about like store of value into medium of exchange, and then further out into like unit of account where you can more reliably price goods and services in Bitcoin. I think it'll become more and more apparent to these people, to the types of people who are sending remittances home, that that's a viable option. I sort of understand, right now, if you send, a bit of Bitcoin where it's valued at, 65,000, and then by the time it gets there, it's at 58. You feel like you've lost, especially if they need that immediately. And that's where, and this is probably a controversial take, especially in the Bitcoin community, but I understand the value of something like stable coins for that purpose, that you can transact dollars or dollar equivalents, that are hopefully backed, and make it more accessible for people to get the dollars that they need, which are usually more valuable than the currency of these poor countries, and that's what's in demand. Yeah, I completely agree, Rick. I think there's a point where Bitcoin reaches like a critical threshold of adoption that it becomes much easier, and like the use case is just so glaringly obvious for these folks that MoneyGram and Western Union, some of these companies are just completely obliterated. So, gentlemen, I think that's all we got today. For everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in as always. Check out the bitcoinway.com/podcast, schedule a free 30-minute consult with us if you need help with proper Bitcoin self-custody, Plan B residencies, online security, privacy phones, especially in a day and age like this where we're talking about things like Telegram and your messaging and your online communications. These are all pieces of being a sovereign individual. So again, go to the bitcoinway.com/podcast. Rick, Tony, thank you guys for being here. We'll chat again soon.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be here.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, guys.